Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland in our Buck studio with Christopher Peck, who is a charming and a virtuosic young cellist, winner of the 2012 Neil Silva competition. Welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I guess I can say this much behind the scenes here, that you're actually sitting on three chairs.
Yeah.
So you're a first, second, and third chair cello today.
That's right. I'm about 6'3", and most of it happens to come from my legs, and I get pretty uncomfortable if the chairs are too short, which most chairs are. So,
and about your cello, we may as well start with that, since I'm looking right at it, and it looks like a vintage instrument from here.
Yeah, actually, it was very recently made, as cellos go, anyway. It's about 8 years old.
Just 8 years old.
It's taken some wear and tear, I think, due to the way I've handled it, anyway. I bought it when I was about 14, I think. It was my first full-size instrument, and I don't think I intended to keep it this long, but it has sort of turned out to be a lot better than I expected, so.
It's tough, isn't it, shopping for an instrument?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I'll probably have to buy another cello eventually, and that's not something I'm looking forward to.
You mean just because your level of playing will be beyond what this instrument can do for you?
Yeah, something like that, I hope. this cello is designed for, I think, more of a student player, and somehow it turned out that it sounds a lot better than that, and so I've been able to play it as I get more and more advanced, but there aren't many professional cellists that play on an instrument like this. So,
now, did you go through schools, string programs, that kind of thing, in Madison, in Wisconsin?
I grew up mostly in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, I started cello in the school programs in about fourth grade, I think. I also was a student at the Suzuki Center in Stevens Point, where I studied with Lawrence Levitin, and so that's how I got my start, and I sort of have become more and more serious ever since then, and now I'm a student at the university, and it's what I want to do with my life. So,
when you go into a strings program, how is it decided which string instrument you're going to play?
I can't remember exactly. My mom is a violinist, my dad a bassist, and my older brother played the viola.
Oh, all right. That sounds like the making of a sort of a bass-oriented string quartet to me.
Yeah, right. And so it probably had something to do with how that was the one that we hadn't covered yet. But I don't know. I like it more than any of the other instruments today, so.
Well, so you're in business. And you are going to be playing during this edition of the Midday. You're going to be playing not just all Bach, but all one work by Bach.
That's right, yeah. It's the sixth cello suite that he wrote, it's the most difficult of the cello suites, that's for sure. And the suites are really terribly important works in the cello repertoire. They were popularized by Pablo Casals, who was the first person to sort of study them as pieces of music rather than exercises for technique and whatnot. And his recordings are very famous.
So each of these six suites, does it emphasize certain techniques? Is there that kind of system to them?
No, not so much. From what I understand, it was more of an exercise in terms of Bach's composition chops, in that he wanted to see if he could fill out harmonies using only one voice, using just a cello. And the first suite everyone knows started out quite simple, and as you'll see, they get more and more extravagant, and this is the last one he wrote, which is actually written for a cello that has a fifth string, an E string, higher than the A string.
So do you transpose down?
You don't transpose. Well, that is sort of one option, but you lose the scope of the work if you do that. And what ends up happening is you play the original composition, and it's pretty difficult. It goes, whereas most of the other suites range from maybe an A above middle C right there to the low C, this one goes all the way up to that G. So,
some tessitura playing for the cellist. What about the prelude, then, that starts it all? I mean, it's Bach, so it's almost inevitable that it's going to start
with a
prelude.
That's right, yeah. It's not atypical for a prelude. It is based on arpeggiation of the D major chord, which is the tonic for the piece. It's a very extravagant prelude, though. It gets really fast, and there's a huge range, and it's really fun to play.
Well, good. I look forward to hearing you having fun playing it. This is the prelude from that sixth suite for unaccompanied cello by Bach. Christopher Peck is the cellist. Thank you. The Prelude from the sixth of the six unaccompanied cello suites by Johann Sebastian Bach. Christopher Peck, my guest today during the midday. And after the Prelude, we're going to have some dance movements. All five of the remaining movements, which is typical of Bach, is are all the suites this way, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, it's always the same order, with the exception of the substitution for minuets, gavottes, berets. But besides that, that's how it goes.
Do you have the sense in playing these dance movements that they are actually danceable, or are they something a little more abstract?
Yeah, I think at least when I play them, it ends up being pretty far removed from anything that would be dance. Especially this next movement, the Allemande, is sort of so slow. I think many of the manuscripts put molto adagio on it, that you can't really imagine anyone dancing to it.
It's too slow to dance to.
Right.
The next dance, I think it's just one, although maybe a series of them, we'll find out about that in a moment, is an Allemande, which is a German dance. Now, Bach wrote English suites, he wrote French suites, and he certainly wrote German pieces, and I think to this day people are still wondering, you know, what makes it English, what makes it French, or in this case, what makes it German? Do you have a sense of that?
Well, my understanding is that French suites, at least, often have very extended dotted figures, so... Whereas this one is a little bit more reserved in that respect. And I think this particular Allemande is sort of so out there that it's beyond description in terms of style. It's near the end of Bach's life, and I think it was, you might say it was sort of a crazy...
Well, you know, they said the same thing about late Beethoven.
That's
in
right,
the string
yeah.
quartets. What's that guy thinking, anyway? Well, in the case of the Allemande, though, the first thing that you notice is that it's considerably longer than the other movements.
Yeah, and it's... the music looks very strange because it's in 4/4 time, it's about 8 minutes long, and it's 20 measures long. That includes, so including repeats, of course, but there are a lot of 32nd notes and 64th notes, which actually don't end up being all that fast because the quarter note is like 30, 35 or 40 beats per minute.
Uh-huh. So it's just kind of a world all its own.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny when there are images of the manuscript that we have, which is not in Bach's hand. It's in his wife Anna Magdalena's hand. Many of the movements, but this particular movement is, there are so many lines and notes per measure that it's really jumbled and very difficult to read. So there are quite a few spots where no one is really quite sure what rhythm is intended to be played.
Well, that's a challenge. We'll see which rhythm you decide with this Allemande, the second of the six suites of the sixth suite for cello by Bach.
Thank you.
They say about Chopin's waltzes, you know, that he wrote for piano, that they're not for dancing. They're about dancing.
Yeah.
And that, as you say, Chris, that would be very difficult to dance slowly enough to pull off the Allemande that Jesus played from the Bach Sixth Suite. And this third movement, which is a courant, which implies up-tempo, right?
Yeah, much faster dance in three.
And are there any particular techniques in this one that challenge you, the cellist?
It's very fast, which is never something easy. And you sort of have to climb around the neck positions and use your thumb a lot of the time, sort of pretend that you had that fifth string, which it was written for. So,
all right, here we go, the courant. See what you mean. Watching your hands move through that courant is, shows that it's quite a dance in its own right.
That's right, yeah. A dance for my left hand, anyway.
Well, always providing contrast, we come to another dance, which was very popular in Bach's time, and this is the Sarabande. There's some famous Sarabandes. I think of it as kind of almost a soulful, if not mournful at times.
Yeah,
dance.
I think so too. The way that Bach writes it, I think that's especially true. What separates a sarabande from a typical dance in three is that the emphasis is often put on the second beat of the bar. And yeah, they often are, or almost always are, a lot slower than a waltz or a different 3-meter dance.
It would be interesting to visualize. Do you have any sense of what it would actually look like to see somebody dance the sarabande with that second beat accented?
Yeah, not many people have probably done it since the Baroque period, but you sort of, I guess you would just kind of lumber around the room. And
well, depending upon your level of skill, I suppose. I'm sure there were dancers who could make it look graceful. And I'm sure it's going to look graceful on the cello, too. Any particular tricks to playing this?
As I said before, the intent with a sarabande is usually to bring out the second beat of the bar. And this one, actually the way that it lies kind of makes it very difficult to do that. So you have to do things with timing and bow distribution and things like that in order to try and bring that out.
The sarabande.
Thank you.
The Sarabande, the fourth of the six movements from the sixth and last suite for unaccompanied cello by Bach. Christopher Peck, the cellist, with me in our Buck studio today. And now to those gavottes. One word? You want to say one word about the gavottes before we fly into them?
Energetic.
That's one word. Say, Chris, that Bach saves the liveliest for last. I mean, a jig, after all, or a gigue, as he would have called it, is an energetic dance, to be sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. Definitely on the subject of danceable movements, I'd say that the jig is the most danceable of this suite anyway.
And how do you feel about it as the performer? I mean, if you were to perform this suite in public, where you're talking about, 33 minutes or so of music straight through, is this the kind of thing you would say you'd almost dread to get to the to the last movement after all you've been through?
Yeah, a problem that I know I would have performing this whole suite from front to finish is actually getting physically tired, because you have to move up and down the cello so much. This is such great music, though, that at this point you just have a blast and give it your all.
All right, are you rested?
I think so.
Ready to go with the Gigue that ends the unaccompanied suite, number 6 by Bach. Thank you. grand finale. And that gives you all six movements, the prelude, Alabande, Courante, Sarabande, Gavotte, and just now the Gigue, that constitute the sixth of Johann Sebastian Bach's six suites for unaccompanied cello, and quite a workout. And they've only really been played, you say, for about the maybe the, about 100 years or a little more when Casals picked them up.
Yeah, Casals was, in terms of Bach, Casals is definitely the most influential recordings. Not my favorite recordings, but the most influential recordings.
Kind of landmark, and then others have recorded them since. It's almost an avalanche, in fact.
It's so important that cellists very often record them several times, like every 10 years throughout their lives, to see how their perspectives change as they go through things like that.
Yeah, I know that's true of Yo-Yo Ma. I was talking to him not too long ago about that. He has at least two recordings out of those six suites. And so what are your plans as a cellist? You're going to solo career, orchestra, chamber music, all of the above, teaching, graduating?
Yeah, right. Any combination of things that gets me a job. No, I mean, solo career is not a plan. That's not something anyone...
It's a high mountain to climb.
And you could say almost the same thing about an orchestral career, is that it's so competitive out there that no one can say, this is what I'm going to do. But that... some situation where I'm playing the cello and I can make a living off of it is good with me.
And so where are you academically?
Right now I'm a junior at University of Wisconsin here in Madison. I'm majoring in cello, and I'm actually studying math, too, trying to get a double degree. So
that's fascinating how common an arrangement that is, a double major, especially a math-science major with music.
Right, yeah. I have many friends who are music majors, you know, and so many, close to even half, are majoring in a science as well. So
it takes longer, but it's probably more rewarding intellectually.
I think so, yeah. I find it really interesting anyway.
Gets you a chance to use a couple of different spheres of the brain there.
If nothing else, it gives you a backup plan if you don't end up being a successful cellist. So.
Well, I would say that if any composer would appeal to a mathematician, above all, it would be Bach.
Yeah, the structure and rhythmic structure, harmonic structure, even the overarching structure of entire works, I think, is really interesting to examine.
Well, thanks for coming in today and sharing an hour with us, Bach included.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a lot of fun.
Christopher Peck, in addition to being a dynamite cellist, is also one of the winners of the 2012 Neil Silva Young Artist Competition. That includes in a very integral way Wisconsin Public Radio, something we're happy to participate in each year.